Thank you very much. Find, if you will, in your Bible, Judges chapter 3. We're continuing our study for our Bible study tonight, a series that I've entitled Stories You've Never Heard in Sunday School. There are certain ones of these accounts that, for one reason or another, probably are not going to be in the bedtime Bible story books that maybe some of us raised our children on. But they are in the Bible, and they are not to be ignored, and they are to be looked at. And the great thing is God has some instructive gift, an instructive bit of information he wants to pass on to help us. So tonight we're going to talk about a couple of people that maybe are not household names, even among us who are students of the Bible. We're going to talk about Ehud and Eglon. It's just kind of fun to say their names, actually. But Ehud is one of the judges of Israel. We're in this interesting time that Moses has now died, and Joshua, who succeeded him, has now died. And we have yet to have a king who will be coming later. But during this period of time, God would see his people go into disobedience. And he brings things into their world and into their lives to get them to wake up and understand something needs to change. This cycle repeats itself often. And then they cry out to God, Lord, deliver us, help us in this difficulty that we're in. And then God raises up a deliverer, someone to be the judge over Israel, someone who will lead them and direct them and take their hearts back to the Lord. So if you just kind of flip through the pages of Judges, you will see these names. Othniel is one right before, and then you run into Shamgar and Deborah and many of these judges. And Judges is one of those books that sometimes we tend to overlook. We like the story of Samson. That's kind of big and exciting. But many of these not as famous judges we overlook. But tonight we want to talk about the left-handed assassin, okay? An interesting story, and it has a little bit of information in it that if you just kind of stop and think about it, it teaches us a valuable lesson. And I just want to introduce you to Ehud in verse 12 of Judges chapter 3. If you have your copy of the Bible, please follow along. You're welcome to borrow the ones we have in the seat backs if you need to borrow one. And it says in Judges 3 verse 12, and the children of Israel again, key word there is again, because this is a repeating process, a repeating cycle, again did evil in the sight of the Lord. So here's what God does. So the Lord strengthened Eglon, king of Moab, against Israel, because they had done evil in the sight of the Lord. Then he gathered to himself the people of Ammon and Amalek, went and defeated Israel, and took possession of the city of palms. So it's not just one people group oppressing them, which often happened, but here you have this king of Moab, and then you have Ammon and Amalek. So you have a triune grouping of people coming basically from the south and the east and oppressing and defeating Israel militarily. And if you look down into this text, it says he took possession of the city of palms. And you might say, well, where is that? Well, if you'll just trust me on this without trying to prove it to you, that is the oasis where Jericho was. So if you think of Jerusalem and the tribes kind of being mainly in the hill country, and then you go down into the Great Rift Valley where the Dead Sea is, and while you're almost there, there's this oasis where the palms were growing. You remember Jericho was destroyed when Israel went into the land under Joshua. Remember the walls falling down and all of that. It was cursed and had yet to be rebuilt, but apparently at least as an outpost or a place to gather, even the whole city is not rebuilt or the walls are not up at this point. They were later rebuilt, and the curse was enacted in that. But this is where they're camped. So he sets up his headquarters, if you will, in Israel's territory, in a prime place of real estate. If you lived in an arid place and you had a place where there was fresh water and there were lots of palm trees, that's where you wanted to hang out. So here you have them living in opulence and living in great abundance. And basically they're living in abundance because these peoples don't have to work too hard, because they are demanding of Israel that every year they pay tribute or taxes. In other words, it's kind of like a protection racket, okay? As long as the money is coming, nothing bad is going to happen to you. As long as every year we get our payoff, nothing bad is going to happen to you. But if the money stops coming, it just might happen that something very bad is going to happen to you. So that's sort of what is going on. It says in verse 14, "So the children of Israel served Eglon, king of Moab, 18 years. Every year they'd scrape together their money and all the stuff that they had to pay, and they would take it down to the city of Palms in the area of Jericho and say to Eglon, 'Here, we're going to give you this gift, and we understand nothing bad is going to happen to us if we pay off this gift.'" So this has been going on for 18 years. Can you imagine how Israel must have felt? How humiliating, how oppressed, how this is an awful thing. And no one is doing anything about it. I mean, you got the Amalekites, you got Ammon, you got Moab, you got these great warrior-like people all around. We can't do anything about it. Just keep paying the tribute, keep paying the protection money. But it says in verse 14, "But when the children of Israel cried out to the Lord," here's a great question, why didn't they do that 18 years ago? Why weren't they doing it so the 18 years wouldn't have set in, okay? So just note to all of us, it's always time to reach out to the Lord for help when we have difficulties. He's always there. It says, "When they cried out to the Lord raised up a deliverer for them, Ehud, the son of Gera, the Benjamite, a left-handed man. By him the children of Israel sent tribute to Eglon, king of Moab." You learn a couple interesting things about this man, Ehud. First of all, he was the guy that was appointed once a year to take the tax money, take the tribute money, and take it down to the city of Palms and say, "Here, Eglon, here's your payoff for the year." So Eglon, the king of the Moabites, was used to seeing this particular man come and go and come and go. It's happened 18 years, 18 times. So this is the person that God says, "I'm going to use you. Now that you're crying out to me, now that you finally turned to me, finally you've gotten over dealing with the oppression brought by your own disobedience, I'm going to raise up a man." And he puts his finger, and by the way, he always seems to pick in the Judges some of the most unlikely characters that you could imagine. It's one of the things about the book of Judges. It's like, I mean, if all of the military leaders and judges of Israel, Ehud would have lost on the first ballot, okay? This would not have been the guy that anybody thought was going to take place. And then you see this little phrase in the middle of verse 15. This is key to our study tonight. A left-handed man. Now, I know we have some lefties with us tonight, so don't be offended by anything I'm about to say. You know, in our day, it's just different. It's not that it's a bad thing. You know what the left-handed people often say. You know, the right side of your mind controls the left side of your body, and the left side controls the right side of your body. So it's only left-handed people who are in the right mind, you know. You've heard that little phrase before. Except there's me. I write with my left hand and do almost everything else with my right hand. I've just figured that means I'm out of my mind. That's the only thing I can figure out how that works. But in their day, if you were left-handed, particularly militarily, that was not a good thing. That was not a good thing because you didn't fight with you know, rifles and guns from a distance. It was close in, hand-to-hand combat. And you would go in shoulder-to-shoulder with your fellow soldiers. So everybody's got a shield in the left hand and a sword in the right hand, and they have to kind of work in harmony with each other. You got a lefty in it, that sword swinging where you don't need a sword swinging, someone's going to get hurt. So the people who were left-handed were disqualified generally for military service. That was not their thing. That was not what they had the opportunity to do. It's interesting. There is one exception to this. Later in Judges, it talks about that there was a group of people that had an entire army of left-handed people. If you're all left-handed, you can get everybody to get the sword in the right hand. But a left-handed man in the middle of right-handed soldiers was a liability. Now, there's also one other possibility. If you're reading this in Hebrew, it does not say, as we would translate in English, a left-handed man. It would say this, a man who could not use his right hand. That's the way they would say it. And typically, well, what does that mean? Well, that means if I can't use my right hand, I must be left-handed. So that would designate that. Although there's a possibility that this phrase, a man who couldn't use his right hand, maybe it wasn't just he was left-hand dominant. Maybe he was right-hand handicapped. That's at least a possibility, and I can't prove it either way. But suffice it to say, this man had a weakness. God chose a man in there militarily. Nothing wrong with being left-handed, okay? So don't get anyone offended. But militarily, that was a liability. Or if he was handicapped in his right hand, obviously that was a physical handicap, and that would be a struggle for him. But God chose to take this man and his weakness, as you're going to see, and turn it into a strength. And that's the message for us tonight. God can use your weaknesses as well as your strengths. This can be a good follow-on to what we talked about this morning. God isn't finished with you yet, and he never will be. God does have something for us to use for his glory. And sometimes what he has is to take the very thing that is a weakness and use it as a strength, especially as it combines with other people. And we'll talk a bit about that. So let's think our way through. God can use you in spite of some things, all right? Let's talk about some of the in spite ofs, all right? It might be a weakness to us, but God can use us anyway. First of all, we just say it this way. God can use you in spite of the weakness of your current circumstances, your current situation. If you read those verses 12, 13, 14, 15, it was a bad time for Israel. There was nothing going right for them. There was no one standing up. There was not even an organized military or militia or a guerrilla group. There was nothing going on. There was no semblance of a fighting band to defend Israel. No organization, no leadership, nothing. But God uses the person who probably would have been voted the least likely to succeed to be the one through whom he's going to deliver Israel here in just a moment. By the way, we talked about this back when we were talking about questions earlier in the spring. You remember 2 Corinthians where Paul says, Lord, I had this thorn in the flesh, and three times I sought the Lord and asked him. And remember God's answer, my strength is made perfect in weakness. God's power is mightily on display even in our current weakness in this situation. In spite of our handicap, we could add that to the list. And we've already described it. Either he left-handed didn't fit into the military scheme of their thinking in hand-to-hand kind of combat, or maybe he did not have full use of his right hand due to some limitation. But God can use that. Sometimes we just so fixate on what we have as a liability. What we have as a liability, and God uses it for great, great strength. There's people in our lives that God puts in to just cheer us and to encourage us. There's a friend of mine, he's actually, some of you remember, he would come and quote scripture with us. And he was blind from infancy. About a year ago, he went home to be with the Lord. He had cancer and passed away rather quickly. But here was this man, didn't have his sight, had a great liability because of it. But I tell you what, the times I would spend with him, he would teach me some things about being satisfied in the Lord. Looking forward to heaven. Loving God's word. Loving the music of the church. And I would just always found our time, and we have some other friends here to know exactly what I'm talking about. Just would cheer. That liability was a liability to him, but he touched many, many lives and made our lives richer in spite of that what we would say is a handicap. Now, maybe our handicaps aren't that pronounced, but there's something that I'm not very good at that. I'm not very talented at that. I just understand God can use you in spite of that. In spite of the weakness of being alone. Ehud, here in just a moment, is going to have, he's single combat warrior, okay? All right? He's not army. He's not a big group of people. He's not all the chariots and all the soldiers. It's just him. He acts alone. In spite of his aloneness, God uses him and turns his weakness into strength. Sometimes we feel lonely, and sometimes we find ourselves in a lonely situation in life or whatever. God can use you. Just understand that. And also the weakness of overwhelming problems. I mean, Israel's in a log jam here. They're in a problem here, and there doesn't seem to be a way out. No one's standing up to fight. 18 years they've been living with this. There doesn't seem to be any end in sight. They're just dealing with it as best they can. But in spite of that situation, God shows up when they cry out to him. And basically, we might say that they repented. They began recognizing their sin. They took responsibility for their own actions. By the way, that's always a key that unlocks God's work in our lives, when we take responsibility for our own actions. It's not everybody else's fault. It's not society's fault. It's not the government's fault. It's not my parents' fault. It's not... Take responsibility for my own actions. And what needs to be repented of and asked for forgiveness and put under the blood, we do it, and we then use God's strength to move on. So just simply this, don't focus on your weakness. That's what God wants us to do. Not, don't focus on our weakness, but we need to focus somewhere else. And we're going to see that very clearly in this story. Now, we're going to get into the story now. That was kind of just all the setup, okay? But it says, verse 16, "Now Ehud made himself a dagger. It was double-edged and a cubit in length." Cubit's about 15 to 18 inches. And the way they would measure a cubit, it was the length of distance from your elbow to the tip of your middle finger. So you didn't have a tape measure with you. You just pull out your handy-dandy arm, and that was a cubit, okay? So it would vary depending on the person. But so he has this dagger. He makes this little sword, if you will. It says, "And fastened it under his clothes on his right side," okay? Now, he's a left-handed man. Of course, I'm opposite of you here. But he can only use his left hand in combat, whether handicap or just that's the dominant hand. And typically, you have something 18 inches long. If you can't get it on the side you're going to use, okay? So typically, they would take the sword and put it on the right side so you could pull it out this way, okay? So everybody else had the sword on the left hand, pulled out with the right hand. He's left-handed or only has the use of his left hand, so it's on the right side. File that away. That's going to be important to our story in just a moment, okay? Here's how God is going to use this weakness and turn it into a strength, okay? So he can use you. We're going to talk about the because ofs, okay? We talked about the in spite ofs. Let's talk about the because ofs. God's ability to change a prayer into an answer is always in play. They cried out to the Lord. Here's Ehud stepping into the scene. So they cried out, they pray. You got a liability, you got a disability, you got a hardship, you got a difficulty, you got something in your life that's like, God can't use me because of. Never the case, because God can turn a simple prayer into something glorious for his Lord. He can also change poverty into riches, okay? As you're going to find out as we come through this story, every year their money is going to pay. There's this tribute money, this tax money, this protection money, and God's going to deliver him from that. He has ability to change weakness into strength. That's what we began with, and I want to just camp on that as we get into the story, all right? So he brought, verse 17, so he brought the tribute to Eglon, king of Moab. Now, Eglon was a very fat man. I'm just reading the text, folks, okay? It's just in the text, okay? And there's going to be some more verses. I'm just going to read it to you. That's all I'm going to do. I'm not going to comment on it. Part of it is why this is not probably a kid's bedtime Bible study story, okay? So, but by the way, he didn't have to work. The money just come rolling in. He was sitting down at the spa, under the palm trees all the time, all right? So, verse 18. And when he had finished presenting the tribute, so he comes, here's the money, this is the payoff, he sent away the people that had carried the tribute. So he comes in probably with a group of people. They carry in all the money, and maybe it's grain, and maybe it's, who knows, agricultural products, maybe some sheep, but whatever. It's all delivered. And then as they're leaving, all the people came with him. You guys just go on, you go on, you go on. So it's just him. And notice what happens. But verse 19, but he himself turned back from the stone images that were at Gilgal. Why are there stone images? Where is Gilgal? Well, Gilgal is kind of like the next little town north of Jericho or that area, okay? And obviously the Moabites, or maybe Israel in their time of defection, have set up idols. There's an idol to this god. Notice it's plural. An idol to that god. These stone images, and there's a god there, and there's a god. And here's this one man. Left-handed, would not be fit for battle, would not be fit for the army. This one man, his job was to pay off the protection money, and he's walking along and he sees these images. And I find it interesting. It's at that moment he does an about-face and heads back to see the king. I kind of suspect that it's just at that moment looking at these false gods. By the way, that's two of the Ten Commandments broken right there. Have no other gods before me. Don't make any graven image. And this is in the land of God. This is in the land of promise. And here's these images. Someone needs to do something, and there's no other someone but me. And here's what he does. He turned himself back, and he goes back and he says, I have a secret message for you, O king. He said, keep silence. And all who attended him went out from him. So he comes back in. Oh, Ehud, you keep bringing some more money? Why are you back so soon? I have a secret message for you. By the way, Ehud is not telling a lie. Okay? God is about to deliver a message for people who worship idols and defy God and oppress people and do such wicked things, especially to God's people. Okay? Now, it's not a message of niceness, but it's going to be delivered at a sword point, but he's telling the truth. It says in verse 20, so Ehud came to him. Now, he was sitting upstairs in his cool private chamber. And in that arid place, oftentimes, if you would have a two-story building or sometimes a three-story building, and then you'd have a flat roof, and if you could afford it, you'd put a little room up on top with windows or lattice work so the air would blow through and catch the breeze. Closest thing you could get to air conditioning in their day, okay? So he's sitting up there. That's where he'd sit to be comfortable and just, you know, bring me another plate of chicken or another, you know, bring me some lamb or whatever. I'm just going to sit here and enjoy the breeze. So that's where this meeting takes place. It was a private chamber. It was reserved just for the king, okay? This was that no one else had access to it. And Ehud said, I have a message from God for you. So he rose from his seat. Now, remember, he's got a sword with him, and it's on the right side. Everybody else had a sword on the left side. How did he get a sword past the guys whose sworn duty was to be the bodyguards for the king and protect him? I suspect most people that came into the king, especially if you're going to have a private meeting for the king, you're going to get patted down. You're going to get frisked. Well, if you want to know if someone has a sword, what are you going to do? You pat down their left side because that's where people had swords. People who are left-handed, they don't even give them swords. Ehud didn't have a sword. He had to make one himself. So I think this is all part of God's plan. His weakness, quote unquote, God had set it up so he could smuggle this sword on his right side. No one's going to be the wiser. And by the way, Ehud's sitting there. If you saw someone with your right hand start reaching under your clothing on the left side, you're probably going to back up and yell for help. Because that's sort of like someone pulling a gun on you in their day. That's a motion that's going to be threatening. Someone taking their left hand and reaching under their clothing on the right side, you know, what's he got? Another gift, a piece of paper? It's not threatening. It was not a threatening gesture. So God had the right person, right place, and what everybody else would say is a weakness. And God uses it as strength. And Ehud is very ingenious, okay? Now, I told you this is a story that we probably wouldn't spend a lot of time going through children. I'm just going to read it and leave the commentary to someone else, okay? Let me just read the scriptures, all right? All right, verse 21. So Ehud reached with his left hand, took the dagger from his right hand, and thrust it into his belly, even to the hilt. That's the handle of the sword. Even the hilt went in after the blade, and the fat closed over the blade, for he did not draw the dagger out of his belly, and his entrails came out. I'm not saying another word about those verses, okay? It's just going to have to lay there for you. Verse 23. Then Ehud went out through the porch and shut the doors of the upper room behind him and locked them. So he locks him in his private up chamber. And Eglon was not expecting any threat because of this right hand, left hand thing. He doesn't call for help. So Ehud just goes out, locks the door behind him. And when he had gone out, Eglon's servant came to look. To their surprise, the doors of the upper room were locked. So they said, he is probably attending to his needs in the cool chamber. Isn't that a polite way to say it? I'll just say it this way. They assumed he's using the bathroom, okay? And let's just, as is respectable, just give him privacy. We're not going to go knocking on the door. He's got the door shut. It's locked. Leave him alone. So they waited, verse 25, till they were embarrassed, and still he had not opened the doors of the upper room. You know, this is just going on too long. We better check on the king. All the while, what is Ehud doing? He's getting out of town. He's getting away. The left-handed assassin has made his escape. All right? Therefore, they took the key and opened it, and there was their master fallen dead on the floor. But Ehud escaped while they delayed and passed, this is interesting, beyond the stone images, he passes them again. And now there's a cause. And God has delivered the king into his hand, and now everything's going to turn. It says, he passed And he had escaped while they delayed, and he passed beyond the stone images, escaped to Syra. We really don't know where that is. That's one of the localities that archaeology has not yet uncovered. We're not sure exactly. Probably in the area of Benjamin, the tribe of Benjamin, or Ephraim, perhaps. And it happened when he arrived that he blew the trumpet in the mountains of Ephraim, and the children of Israel went down with him from the mountains, and he led them. Suddenly, they're following this left-handed, unlikely soldier into battle. And verse 28 tells us the rest of the story. And he said to them, "Follow me, for the Lord has delivered your enemies, the Moabite, into your hand." So they went after him, seized the fords of the Jordan leading to Moab, and did not allow anyone to cross over. So in the Jordan River, much larger than it is today, because so much of the Jordan River now has been diverted for agriculture and irrigation. But you had to find the right place to cross. So there's a ford where you could still wade through the water and get your horses across and get your chariots across, your wagons across, that sort of thing. So they go there and they seize them. So now the Moabites that are on Israel's side of the Jordan have no way of escaping. They've cut off the escape route. So they went down after him, seized the fords of the Jordan leading to Moab, and didn't allow anyone to cross. At that time, they killed about 10,000 men of Moab, all stout men of valor, not a man escaped. So Moab was subdued that day under the hand of Israel, and the land had rest for 80 years. God used this unlikely person because he turned his weakness into strength. A couple things I'll just add to the list. Okay, God has the ability to change evil into inspiration. Those images along the way, he passes them twice. Both times, I think they bolstered his courage. And it gave him courage for the thing. He turned evil into inspiration. He can change trial into opportunity. The trial that Israel was in and this trial that Ehud personally faced became the opportunity and the right person in the right sequence of events at the right place at the right time to be the catalyst wherein Israel rose up and under the hand of God they defeated their enemies. And he has the ability to change defeat into victory. And of all the things I've said to you tonight, that's the most encouraging. You had some defeat in your life, he can turn it into victory. Has your life been pockmarked by some really bad moments and some damage and some craters left behind? God can turn it into victory if you trust in him. All right? So rather than focus on your weakness, it's simple as this. Focus on God's ability. When you're facing a challenge, when you're facing a problem, when you feel like I can't because of, focus on what God can do. Think about some of the things that God can do. What's some of the things, amazing things he's done in the Bible? He used a left-handed guy to wipe out the Moabites, okay? That's case in point. But he's done things like parted seas and stopped the Jordan and pushed down the walls of Jericho. He defeated all sorts of people around. He raised up a king like David, a man after his own heart, to write scriptures and to write psalms and to be the one through whom his line, the Savior, would come. He's healed the sick. He's fed the hungry. He's given sight to the blind. He's raised the dead. Focus on what God can do. You have your moment of discouragement. You have your moment of trial, your moment of like, I have a liability. God can't use me. Just cry out to him. It's simple. The transaction is easy to comprehend anyway. Don't focus on your inability. Focus on God's ability.